Well, we looked at the French Reformed Church as a whole.
我们刚在前两堂，从一个比较广大的视角来看整个法国宗教改革作为一个整体。
So now we'll zoom in and look at one pastor in the church.
那现在我们要开始更近距离的去，仔细的来讲解一个法国的改革宗牧师。
In the fall of 1620, the prominent French Reformed minister Pierre Dumoulin nearly lost his life.
1620年的秋天，著名的法国宗教改革牧师皮埃尔·杜穆兰险些失去了他自己的生命。
Edward Herbert, who was the ambassador for King James of Scotland and England in Paris, pleaded with Dumoulin to write to the king requesting that he aid his son-in-law, who was the Elector Palatine and the so-called King of Bohemia,in the early days of the Thirty Years' War.
当时英格兰国王詹姆斯一世的驻巴黎的大使爱德华赫伯特恳求杜穆兰致信给法国国王，请求他援助他的女婿普法尔茨选侯来应对三十年战争初期的危机。
Dumoulin, who pastored the French Reformed congregation in Paris,had been corresponding with James for more than 10 years and had produced multiple theological treatises on behalf of the king.
杜穆兰在当时的巴黎牧会，他是法国改革宗教会的牧师，那他与英格兰国王詹姆士已经通信了十多年，这个英国的詹姆士王就是我们所谓的英王钦定本翻译的这个英王。
He had also visited James in England in 1615.
他还曾经在1615年前往英格兰去拜访詹姆士王。
Dumoulin, however, had never inserted himself into a volatile political situation involving James.
但是杜穆兰并没有亲身卷入任何涉及到詹姆士的敏感政治的事务。
Dumoulin later recorded that he refused Herbert's initial request because he said this business was too high for a man of low condition like me.
杜穆兰后来记述说，他起初拒绝了这个驻巴黎大使赫伯特的请求，他说此事太过重大，不适合我这种卑微之人来插手。
Herbert replied that Dumoulin's letters were always very acceptable to his majesty and might work very much upon him.
赫伯特却说，杜穆兰的书信一向深得英国国王的欢心，极有可能对他产生极大的影响。
Deluded by ego or naivete, Dumoulin complied with Herbert's request and delivered the letter to the ambassador's secretary.
不论是出于他的自负还是单纯的天真，杜穆兰最后答应了赫伯特的请求，并且写了这封信交给了大使的秘书。
Dumoulin then traveled to LA to preside over the Reformed Synod.
在这之后，他便启程去往阿莱市，主持法国改革宗教会的全国总会。
But the letter never reached King James's hand.
但是杜穆兰的信却从未到达詹姆士国王的手中。
So King James was the most powerful Protestant king in all of Europe.
所以詹姆士王就是英国国王詹姆士一世，他是当时整个欧洲最有权力的这个宗教改革的国王。
And Dumoulin was asking King James to enter into the Thirty Years' War, which was between Catholics and Protestants.
所以杜穆兰的这封信的目的是为了请求英王詹姆士一世来加入法国当时正在打的这个三十年宗教战争。
The council of the French king intercepted Dumoulin's letter and ordered his arrest for petitioning a foreign monarch to engage in war on behalf of Protestants.
法国国王的这个特务机构啊，收就截获了杜穆兰的这份信件，并且下令逮捕他，罪名是向外国君主请求发动战争，以援助本国的新教徒。
After receiving word that he was a wanted man, Dumoulin snuck into Paris at night and met with Herbert, who advised him to flee for his life.
当得知自己被通缉之后，杜穆兰连夜潜入巴黎，与大使赫伯特秘密会面。赫伯特劝他马上逃命。
Without returning to his home, Dumoulin left Paris and the church he had pastored for more than 20 years and escaped to Sedan, which was a city of refuge for Reformed Protestants.
杜穆兰没有回家，便立刻离开了巴黎，逃离了那间他牧养了二十年的教会。他逃往色当，就是当时许多法国改革宗信徒的避难所。
Dumoulin remained in Sedan for the majority of his remaining years.
在这里他度过了余生。
Dumoulin's ambition and confidence had garnered him international influence and financial gain.
杜姆兰的雄心和自信也为他赢得了他的在国际上的声望。
However, these passions had clouded his judgment in sending the letter to James and led him to the lowest moment of his life.
然而也同样正是因为他这些特性使得他在写信给詹姆斯一事上的这个事情上他判断失误跌入了人生的低谷。
He lost his congregation and the primary means of providing for his family.
他失去了整个会众也失去了养家糊口的最重要的途径。
He could no longer participate in the primary activities of the French Reformed churches, and he almost lost his life.
他无法参加法国改革宗教会的主要活动，例如宗教会议等等，甚至他险些失去了自己的生命。
Now, paradoxically, this very same ambition and confidence led to Dumoulin's resurgence.
具有讽刺意义的是，正是因为他的这份野心和自信，他也促成了他再一次的崛起。
The pastor wrote James less than a year after his exile, proposing that he move his family to England.
在他流亡之后一年，杜姆兰写信给詹姆士王，请求他允许他的全家迁到英格兰。
Two years later, James invited Dumoulin to relocate.
两年之后，詹姆士王正式的邀请他一家前往英国。
The king had commissioned the pastor to issue a response to Cardinal Jacques David du Perron's volume against him.And believed that England offered more leisure and helps for the completion of the project.
詹姆士委托杜姆兰撰写一部反对屈膝主教的作品，并且认为在这部作品当中表达认为英格兰能够为他的工作提供更多的闲暇和资源。
Dumoulin accepted the king's invitation and remained in England until shortly after King James's death in 1625.
杜姆兰接受了他的邀请，并在英格兰居住，一直到1625年詹姆士去世。
Dumoulin published his reply to Cardinal du Perron, one of the most celebrated works of his long career, in 1627.
杜姆兰在1627年出版了他对佩龙屈膝主教的这部回应的作品，成为他整个职业生涯当中最著名的著作之一。
He fulfilled his commitment to King James, even though the king had been dead for 2 years.
他履行了对詹姆士王的承诺，尽管国王已经去世两年之久。
Dumoulin said, "This great king, having given me the honor to employ my pen for his defense during his lifetime, I would be ungrateful to his memory if I abandoned his cause after his death."
杜姆兰写道：“这位伟大的君王在世的时候，曾赐给我荣幸，以为他辩护。如果他在死后，我便丢弃了这事，便是忘恩负义。”
This account of exile and resurgence.Displays the struggle for consistency in the life of Pierre Dumoulin.
这段流亡和复兴的经历展现了皮尔·杜姆兰一生在信仰和雄心之间寻求一致的挣扎。
He was a dedicated churchman and husband and father, and he was also a fiery polemicist with grand visions for achieving theological and ecclesiastical prominence.
杜姆兰是一位忠诚的牧师、父亲、丈夫，同时他也是一位性情激烈、立志在神学和教会事务上取得卓越成就的辩论家。
He failed to achieve his goal of becoming one of the leading figures in a reunited Christendom, but he did become a respected leader within both French Reformed churches and in international Calvinism.
虽然他没有成功的实现，重建基督教合一的国度。当中的领袖人物的这样的愿望，但是他的确成为了法国改革宗教会与国际加尔文主义运动当中的重要领袖。
Pierre Dumoulin was the preeminent figure in the French Reformed churches in the first half of the 17th century.
在17世纪上半叶，皮尔·杜姆兰堪称是法国宗教改革宗教会当中最具影响力的人物。
His theological treatises, his devotional works, and collections of sermons appeared in more than 1,200.Separate editions or printings.
他的神学著作、灵修作品以及讲道集，一共出版发行超过1200种不同的版本。
One historian estimated that Dumoulin published more frequently than any Calvinist writer during the 16th and 17th centuries, with the only possible exceptions being John Calvin and Theodore Beza.
他的出版数量如此之多，以至于学者们估计，在16、17世纪之间，没有任何一位改革宗作者 出版的数量超过杜牧兰除了加尔文和贝扎之外。
The focus of attention in this address is his life as a pastor in the French Reformed Church.
我们在第三讲的重点是在于杜牧兰作为法国改革宗教会的牧师的一生。
He was born in October of 1568.
他出生于1568年10月。
His father, Joachim, had been born into a Roman Catholic family, but his schoolmaster in Paris convinced him of the Reformed faith.
他出生在一个天主教的家庭里，但在巴黎求学的时候被他的一位老师说服接受了改革宗的信仰。
Joachim's convictions were so strong that neither the proffer of worldly advancement nor his mother's severity, threatening to forsake and disinherit him, could turn him from his holy purpose.
据他的后代记载，他的父亲的天主教的信念非常的坚定，无论世俗的升迁的诱惑还是母亲严厉的威胁要断绝母子关系并且剥夺继承权，这些都没有使得他偏离这神圣的志向，指的他的这个杜牧兰自己。
Joachim was disinherited at his mother's death and he struggled for decades to support his family on the meager income of a pastor.
所以杜牧兰的父亲，也就是杜牧兰的父亲的母亲去世的时候，也就是他的奶奶去世的时候，他的父亲被剥夺了继承权，在几十年之间靠着微薄的薪水养家。
Despite the rumors of the day that Pierre was the son of an apostate friar, Joachim had never spent time in a monastery.
当时有人谣传，Pierre, 杜牧兰是叛教的修士的孩子，但是这纯属虚构，因为他的父亲从来没有进入过修道院。
Pierre praised his father for his honorable conversation, his brave mind, and his continual afflictions for the gospel, which he bore cheerfully, his fervent zeal, his vigilance and his calling, his pleasing and affable behavior, which he seemed seasoned with a meek gravity.
Pierre 后来称赞他的父亲说，他为福音所受的苦，为福音受苦而感到喜乐。他为人正直，热心火热，勤于牧养。他的举止温和亲切，也带着庄严的敬虔。
These I say were as far from the air of the cloister as the heaven is from the earth, and the mass from the gospel.
这一切与修道院的气息如天壤之别，正如弥撒与福音的区别，也如天壤之别一样。
Due to persecution, Joachim and his family were forced to flee to the Mornay home in Normandy at the outbreak of the Third French Religious War in the autumn of 1568.
由于法国境内的宗教迫害，1568年秋天第三次宗教战争爆发的时候，皮埃尔的父亲约阿希姆携带着他的家人逃往诺曼底的莫尔内进行避难。
Then in 1570, the Dumoulins settled in Soissons, where Joachim pastored the Reformed Protestant congregation.
1570年，全家迁居到了苏瓦松。他的父亲在那里牧养改革宗的教会。
St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, which we mentioned earlier, 1572, had a profound effect on the family.
接下来第二年，1572年的圣巴德罗买大屠杀，对于这个家庭造成了极大的创伤。
Pierre's maternal grandfather was martyred, leaving to his posterity the honor to be the seed of a martyr, which is no small nobility.
皮埃尔的外祖父在那场屠杀中殉道了，他的子孙后来说，他给后代所留下的殉道者的荣誉，绝非微不足道的尊荣。
Joachim was a target for Roman Catholic zealots, so he left his four children in the care of a Catholic farm woman, while he and his wife fled to Sedan.
所以皮埃尔的父亲约亚希姆本人也成为了天主教的追杀目标，他与妻子逃往色当前。把四个孩子交托给了一位天主教的农妇来看管。
Pierre hid under the bed when the Catholic soldiers entered the farmhouse, and his sister nearly smothered him while she attempted to quiet his whimpering.
当天主教的士兵搜查农舍的时候，年幼的皮埃尔藏在床下，他的姐姐为了防止他的声音被士兵听到，几乎快把他闷死了。
He's 4 years old.
他当时四岁。
Pierre received his education at the recently founded college at Sedan, while his father pastored the Reformed Church at Soissons.
Pierre 后来在新成立的色当学院接受教育，他的父亲，当时在苏瓦松继续牧会。
Joachim was forced to seek refuge from persecution in Sedan on several occasions.
而他的父亲也多次因为迫害而被迫逃回到色当来避难。
So his father Joachim spent much of his life on the run from persecution.
所以皮埃尔的父亲基本上一生都是在不停的跑路。
Pierre's mother died when he was 5 years old in 1573, and his father remarried the following year.
1573年，皮埃尔的母亲去世，当时他只有五岁。第二年，他的父亲再婚。
The Dumoulins were mired in poverty, and Pierre needed to make his own way.
杜莫兰一家始终陷于贫困之中，因此皮埃尔不得不为自己谋生。
His father initially sent him to Paris to find work, but the persecution of Protestants in that city forced Pierre to escape to England to study at the universities there, an opportunity afforded typically only to the wealthy.
一开始他的父亲把他送到巴黎去寻求工作，但是当时巴黎迫害新教徒的情况非常严重，所以皮埃尔最后逃去了英格兰，在那里他得以有机会进入到大学里学习，这在当时通常只有富贵的人家的孩子才有这样的机会。
Pierre Dumoulin's character and actions over the remaining course of his life should be understood in light of his surviving the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre and his family's extreme poverty.
皮埃尔·杜莫兰一生的性格和他的行为举止必须在他过去的这个经历当中找到这个原因，也就是他幸存于圣巴多罗买大屠杀以及他的家庭极度贫困的背景。
Pierre's enduring enthusiasm for anti-Catholic polemics and his relentless attacks in each of his works most likely resulted from his traumatic experiences when he was only 4 years old, St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, when he was preserved, he said, from the rage of Satan and the world.
他晚年持续高涨的反对罗马天主教的热情，以及他在每一部作品当中对罗马教会毫不留情的攻击，这显然源自于他四岁的时候所经历的那场创伤。他的儿子后来写到，父亲当年是从撒旦与世界的狂怒中被上帝拯救出来的。
His anti-Catholic bitterness was undoubtedly deepened during his time studying in England when he received news that his younger brother in France had been captured by the Catholic League and buried alive.
他对天主教的深刻的敌意无疑在留学英格兰期间进一步加深，就是在那时他得知弟弟在法国被天主教同盟军俘获之后被活埋致死。
Some of Pierre's career moves, particularly his attempts to gain an international reputation, surely were motivated, at least in part, by a desire to improve his family's financial position and to spare his children from the economic hardships that he faced as a youth.
皮埃尔后来的一些职业抉择，尤其是他多次尝试获得国际声望，至少在部分动机上源自于一种希望改善家庭经济状况，让自己的子女免受自己年幼时的贫困的这种愿望。
The chaos of his upbringing, the persecution, the forced exile, his father's frequent absences, the death of his mother when he's only 5, drove him to seek stability for his own wife and children.
他童年时所经历的迫害、流亡、父亲频繁的逃亡和缺席，以及年仅五岁时母亲的早逝，这一切都促使他一生渴望为自己的妻子和儿女建立稳定安全的生活。
When Dumoulin arrived in London, he connected with the Huguenot congregation in the city, and he filled the pulpit on multiple occasions.
当杜莫兰来到伦敦的时候，很快与当地的法国改革宗教会取得了联系，并且多次登台讲道。
He survived in England on the financial gifts that were sent to him by the churches in France.
他在英格兰的生活主要依靠法国教会寄给他的捐款来维持。
A representative of the Reformed congregation at Paris asked Dumoulin if he would be interested in serving a re-established congregation there.
法国巴黎改革宗教会的一位代表写信询问他是否愿意回到法国担任即将重建的一个教会的牧师。
Dumoulin graciously declined the offer to pastor a congregation that did not yet exist and could not pay him.
杜莫兰婉拒了这个提议，认为这是一个还没有建立并且没有无力支付他薪酬的教会，他不会去承担这样的牧职。
The individual informed Dumoulin that the congregation would be re-established soon and assured him they had the necessary funds.
而这位代表向他保证，教会很快会被重新建立起来，并且已经筹集到了必要的资金。
Dumoulin accepted this condition as promised and was promised 50 écus per year, which was a sufficient sum to live honestly, he said.
杜莫兰于是接受了这个条件，并且他得到了承诺，每年会 获得五十埃居的薪酬。他说这笔钱足以让我过上体面的生活。
Huguenot refugees found Dumoulin work with Henry Constable, an English poet and courtier to Elizabeth I.
在胡格南难民的帮助下，杜莫兰获得了一份工作，担任英国诗人伊丽莎白一世的宫廷侍臣亨利·康斯特布尔的助手。
Constable was himself a Protestant polemicist, writing against Roman Catholic theologians.
康斯特布尔是当时的一位这个宗教改革的论战家，新教的论战家，他撰写反驳罗马天主教的作品。
After Constable declared his allegiance to Catholicism, Dumoulin was hired by the Countess of Rutland to tutor her son at Cambridge.
而后来康斯坦布尔改信了罗马天主教，杜莫兰则 转移到另外一个伯爵夫人家里面，为他儿子当教师，前往了剑桥大学，在那里做这个工作。
This position enabled Dumoulin to continue his own studies and matriculate at Corpus Christi College in Cambridge, and he heard the lectures of William Whittaker, whom he called a man of great knowledge, and possibly at Oxford under the Puritan John Reynolds.
这份工作不仅让杜莫兰有了稳定的收入，也使他得以在剑桥继续深造。他入读了剑桥大学的圣体学院，旁听了著名学者威廉·威特格尔的讲座。这位神学家以他的知识渊博而著称，他也很可能曾经在牛津大学旁听另外一位著名的教授的课程。
After 4 years in England, Dumoulin made his way to the university at Leiden, where Franciscus Unius, whom he admired, had recently taken up residence.
英格兰生活了4年之后，皮尔·杜莫兰前往了荷兰的莱顿大学，当时著名的神学家尤尼乌斯正在此教学。
2 months after his arrival, Dumoulin was appointed to teach logic, Greek, and Horace in the college there.
在来到莱顿大学之后，杜莫兰被学院聘请当做教授来教授逻辑学、希腊语和赫拉斯诗。
The following July, he was made professor of philosophy at the university, where he taught the works of Aristotle and engaged in many public disputations.
第二年的七月，他被任命为大学的哲学系教授，教授亚里士多德著作，并且多次参与学术辩论。
His son considered Leiden to be his father's fencing school, whereby he was enabled for the many encounters and conferences which he had afterwards upon the greatest stage of Europe.
他的儿子皮特·杜莫兰后来称莱顿是他父亲成长的地方，在那儿他学得的辩论技巧使得他日后在欧洲更大的舞台上得以迎战群雄。
Dumoulin published a logic textbook while in Leiden, which was issued in 13 editions.
杜莫兰在莱顿期间出版了一本逻辑学的教材，总共发行了13版。
The work soon became a standard in the field, and Dumoulin would put his skill in logic to use in many of his anti-Catholic polemical works.
很快，这本书就成为了逻辑学领域的权威教科书。在后来的与天主教的论战作品当中，他常常使用这个逻辑训练的结果。
He took leave from the university in 1596 to visit his father in France.
1596年，杜莫兰离开大学去回到法国探望自己的父亲。
He stopped in Paris on his journey back to Leiden and met with the pastor and elders of the Reformed congregation, who encouraged him to remain in the city.
在返回的途中，他在巴黎停留，并且与当地改革宗教会的牧师长老们会面。对方鼓励他留在巴黎服侍，但是他却委婉地拒绝了。
Dumoulin refused this renewed offer because he had assured the university trustees at Leiden that he would return.
因为他已经向莱顿大学的董事会承诺会返回学校继续教书。
In 1598, Dumoulin finally submitted to the urging of the French Reformed churches to become a minister, and he left his post at Leiden.
1598年，杜莫兰最终顺服了法国改革宗教会的多次的劝请，接受他们的邀请成为牧师，离开莱顿大学。
For the remainder of his life, he maintained a great affection for the Dutch people and for Holland, which he called his second country.
但是他始终对荷兰有着深厚的感情，他称荷兰是他第二个故乡。
Pierre Dumoulin lived through the French Reformed Church's lowest point in history, the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, and he experienced extreme poverty as a child in France and as a young man in England.
杜莫兰所经历的法国改革宗历史上最黑暗的时期，圣巴德罗买耶大屠杀。他在童年和青少年时期尝尽了贫困之苦，在法国遭受迫害，在英格兰以微薄的收入维持生计。
He worked and even schemed to ensure that his children were not subject to the difficult circumstances that he had faced, a frequently absent father, persecution from Catholics, and extreme poverty.
他一生竭尽全力的工作，有的时候不乏各种的算计，只是为了确保他的儿女不再重蹈他的覆辙。
And he remained under the influence of his reformed forebears, including John Calvin, John Reynolds, William Whitaker, in honoring the church fathers as forerunners of the faith, but denying that they were qualified to serve as judges of contemporary theological controversies.
在他的神学思想上，他始终受许多的改革宗先驱们的影响，包括约翰加尔文、约翰雷诺兹或者 Whitaker。他尊崇这些人是信仰上的先驱，但却否认他们有权成为神学辩论当中的这个绝对权威。
His arrival in Paris in 1599 was the most opportune moment for an emerging French Reformed pastor and polemicist.
1599年抵达巴黎的杜莫兰，在当时可谓是一个崭露头角的法国改革宗牧师兼论战家。
As we said earlier, the recently issued Edict of Nantes, 1598,had permitted the Huguenots to hold worship services at the home of Princess Catherine before they eventually built a church in Charenton. The Reformed churches were experiencing relative political stability compared to the past 40 years of turbulent religious wars, and the treatise wars between Protestants and Catholics in France was commencing.
所以我们之前也提到了，就在他来到法国巴黎之前的一年，1598年，刚刚颁布的南特敕令允许法国改革宗信徒在凯瑟琳公主家中举行敬拜，随后他们会搬到 Charlottetown 成立一个新的教堂，但是这与之前的宗教战争的动荡相比，如今法国改革宗教会获得了相对稳定的政治环境，但是同时一场新教与罗马天主教之间的这种论战，文献论战也在全国范围内展开了。
After a harrowing journey on which he was nearly captured by soldiers in the Spanish Netherlands, Dumoulin spent 3 months at his father's home near Orleans to prepare himself for ministry.
在经历了很多惊险的旅途，几乎被一些天主教士兵捕获之后，杜莫兰抵达了奥尔良附近的父亲的住所，在那里停留三个月，准备进入到牧职。
He was examined and ordained in December of 1598, and then he filled the pulpit at Blois for 2 months.
1598年12月，他通过了教会的案例考核，并且接受案例，随后在布鲁瓦讲道两个月。
Finally, he arrived in Paris on the last day of February in 1599.
最终，他在1599年2月最后一天抵达了巴黎。
Dumoulin's life prior to his acceptance of the pastoral call to Paris can be viewed as preparation for this monumental task.
Dumoulin 在接受巴黎牧职之前的一生都可以视之为为这个伟大的使命所做的长期的预备。
He was educated in Sedan in England. He gained experience as a professor and author in the Netherlands, and he was toughened by financial and other hardships.
他在色丹和英格兰接受出色的教育，在荷兰获得教授席位和著作家的经验，他在贫困和患难中磨练了坚韧的品格。
During his time in Paris, he would be elevated to the highest levels of the French Reformed churches and gain an international reputation.
在巴黎任牧师职务期间，杜莫兰将会被推到整个法国改革宗教会的最高领袖层这个地位，并且获得国际性的声望。
Dumoulin's reputation grew to such an extent during his time in Paris that he received multiple offers to leave his church.
在巴黎任职期间，杜莫兰的声望迅速的攀升，甚至到达他连续接到多个外部发出的邀请。
The Reformed Academy at Saumur twice offered him a professor position, and the University of Leiden asked him to fill the chair of divinity, once after Arminius's death in 1609, and again after the Synod of Dort in 1619.
所以在苏米尔的改革宗神学院曾经两度向他发出邀请担任教授，莱顿大学在亚米纽斯去世之后邀请他接替亚米纽斯担任神学教授，在多特大会之后又一次发出邀请。
On each occasion, the consistory of the Paris Church refused to grant Dumoulin permission to leave, and he submitted to their judgment until he was forced to flee France for Sedan in 1621.
而每一次巴黎教会的牧长会都拒绝批准他离开，离任这个牧师职位，而杜莫兰始终顺服他们的决定，直到1621年，他被迫逃往了色当。
So don't forget, if Pastor E receives opportunities to leave CCRC, the consistory can refuse to let him go.
Okay, I'm not going to translate that. 他说在按照改革宗的智慧的体制，在教会里面的牧师如果收到了其他教会或者其他的机构的邀请要离开这个牧职的时候，牧长会有权利拒绝这个邀请，就是保持他的牧师还在教会里面任职。
Dumoulin lived much better in Paris than he had in Leiden or in England.
在巴黎，杜莫兰的生活远比在莱顿或英格兰的时候优越得多。
His home was spacious enough to accommodate his 5 children, as well as a study on the top floor.
他的住宅宽敞，足以容纳一家七口，他还有一间位于顶楼的书房。
According to his son, Dumoulin faced multiple attempts against his life in this home.
那可能这个书房的位置不太好，根据他的长子记载，他在这儿多次遭遇很多次的暗杀企图。
Lone assassins were rebuffed by his servant bodyguard on multiple occasions, and Dumoulin's wife turned away with a word, a man that she perceived had ill intent.
有许多行刺者数次被他的仆人和护卫击退，然后并且他的妻子也有一次喝退了一名意图不轨的男子。
Poisoned flowers were sent to his home, and twice his house received musket fire from angry mobs.
有人寄送给他带毒的花束，企图毒杀他。他的房屋两次遭到暴民的开火射击。
He and his family escaped unharmed from all of these attempts.
然而，在上帝护理之下，杜莫兰和他的家人安然无恙。
But Dumoulin nearly did to himself what the assassins could not do.
有一次，他几乎亲手酿成了自己的悲剧。
On a bitterly cold night in his unheated study, a charcoal heater nearly asphyxiated him.
在一个寒冷的冬夜，他在一个未加取暖的书房里使用炭火取暖的时候，几乎差点让他一氧化碳中毒致死。
His eldest son found him passed out in his study and ran downstairs shouting, "My father is dead."
他的长子发现他昏倒在书房里的时候，惊恐地跑下楼喊道，我的父亲死了。
Dumoulin survived and he was back in the pulpit in just a few weeks.
然而杜莫兰奇迹般地苏醒了，在几个星期之后又重新登上讲台讲道。
His family's high quality of life in Dumoulin's first decade in Paris reflects the relative stability that King Henry IV brought to France following the tumultuous period of the wars of religion.
杜莫兰一家在巴黎的前十年的优越生活正反映出了亨利四世在宗教战争动荡之后为法国带来的和平与稳定。
Now we'll talk about his relationship with King James.
接下来我们要来聊一下杜莫兰和英格兰国王詹姆士之间的关系。
King James and Dumoulin first made contact in the days leading up to James's coronation in England in 1603.
英格兰国王詹姆士与皮尔杜莫兰的首次接触可以追溯到1603年。
James sent expressions of his royal favor to the consistory of Paris, which then chose Dumoulin to compose letters of gratitude to the king.
当时詹姆士马上要被在英格兰被加冕，当时他向巴黎改革宗教会的牧长会表达了王室的友好和这个恩宠。牧长会选择杜莫兰起草回应国王的这个答谢信。
The relationship between James and Pierre Dumoulin appeared to form out of mutual respect.
二人之间的关系由此建立，并且发展成为一种相互尊重的友谊。
James was convinced that the first step in uniting all Protestants in Europe was to join the Church of England with the French Reformed churches, to which he promised never to fail to do them all good.
詹姆士有这样的一个宏伟的计划和野心，他想要实现整个欧洲的新教徒的合一运动。那第一步就是使英格兰教会和法国改革宗教会联合，并且承诺绝不会停止为他们谋求益处。
Dumoulin, who was the lead pastor in the largest congregation of the French Reformed churches, made the ideal partner.
而作为法国改革宗最大教会的首席牧师，杜莫兰自然成为这一计划当中的理想的合作者。
The most significant feature of the partnership of James and Dumoulin was their plan for Christian union.
詹姆士国王和杜莫兰合作当中的最重要的成果就是他们共同推进了一项称为基督教合一计划的运动。
The French Reformed churches have been pursuing unity amongst Protestants since their 1578 National Synod.
自从1578年来的法国宗教会议，法国改革宗教会一直努力地推动新教之间各个教会的合一。
Nearly every subsequent national synod until 1612 approved activity related to Protestant ecumenism, including the adoption of other churches' confessions, the proposal of a general synod of Reformed churches, and the call for collaboration on a joint confession.
几乎每一次法国的改革宗总会都会通过一些与普世新教联合的相关议案，其中包括采纳其他地区改革宗教会的信条，提议召开各改革宗教会总会议，呼吁合作一同制定改革宗共同的信仰告白。
Dumoulin led the efforts of the French Reformed in pursuit of Protestant union.
在这一背景下，也为杜莫兰和詹姆士的跨国合作提供了神学和教会的基础。
In a March 1613 letter to James, he included 20 articles outlining the means for uniting Protestantism.
在1613年3月，他写信给英格兰国王詹姆士，信中附上了20条合议的方案。
He proposed an initial gathering of two theologians from each state.
他提议首先召开一次由各国派出两名神学家作为代表参加的会议。
At this meeting, the theologians would place all the Reformed confessions on a table and then compose a new one.
并且他提议在会上各个代表把所有改革宗教会的各个信条都陈列在桌子上，然后共同拟定一份新的信仰告白。
The unified confession would not address matters beyond what they considered those necessary for salvation. For example, Arminius' teaching on predestination and the perseverance of the saints.
这份统一的信仰告白杜莫连提议说只会涉及到关乎救恩的重要的教义，避免超过核心信仰的那些争议问题，例如亚米纽斯关于预定和圣徒坚忍的教义。
He believed that formulating a new confession would not cause much difficulty because the churches already agreed on the essential faith.
杜莫兰认为制定这份新的信条不会有太大的困难，因为各个地方的改革宗教会已经在教义上早已一致。
Their only differences were confined to polity and ceremony.
各个地区的改革宗教会的分歧仅仅限于教会的体制和仪式等等。
To prevent any discord in these areas, each delegate would declare that his church would not condemn the other churches over these differences.
为了防止因为这些问题引发争议，他建议每一名代表都首先声明本教会不会因为这些体制和礼仪上的差异而定罪其他教会。
King James was to oversee the meeting from afar and to offer advice through his messengers.
按照计划，英王詹姆士将会远程监督会议，并且通过他的大使使节来提供他的意见。
Following the successful conclusion of the conference, all the delegates would travel to England in order to pay their respects to James.
会议圆满结束之后，所有参加会议的神学家将会前往英格兰向国王献上敬意。
Now, in the final point of his proposal, Dumoulin expressed the goal of the unified Protestants holding an ecumenical council in order to reconcile with Rome.
那在杜莫兰的提议的最后一条，提出了一个更终极的目标，就是在统一之后，整个新教徒团体召开大公会议，寻求与罗马天主教的和解。
One historian described this hope for reconciliation with Rome as breathtaking in its boldness and its apparent disregard of a century of bitterness and conflict that had followed Luther's 95 Theses of 1517.
一位历史学家这样评论这个计划，他说：“杜莫兰的计划大胆的令人窒息，其胆识几乎可以无视 那来自1517年之后的长达一个世纪的仇恨和冲突。”
An alternative interpretation is that Dumoulin had experienced much of the bitterness and conflict, having survived the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, the French Wars of Religion, and he sought to achieve peace between Protestants and Catholics, however unlikely.
也有人认为正是因为杜莫兰亲自经历了这些仇恨和冲突，包括圣巴多罗买大屠杀以及法国宗教战争，他才渴望在他有生之年能够实现新教与天主教的和平共处。
Dumoulin's modified plan for union was submitted to the synod at Tannes in 1614 of the French Reformed Churches.
杜莫兰把修订之后的合议计划在1614年递交给了在托内恩举行的法国改革宗大会。
Ultimately, this audacious plan of the pastor and King James did not succeed.
然而，这一野心勃勃的计划最终未能实现。
The Arminian controversy in the Dutch churches, as well as many political factors, prevented his plan from being implemented.
荷兰教会的亚米念争议以及复杂的政治局势使得这一计划最终流产。
Despite his failure, Dumoulin should be commended for pursuing unity amongst Reformed Protestants.
尽管这个计划失败了，但是杜莫兰仍然值得被称赞，追求被称为追求合一的改革宗先驱。
So what can we learn from Pierre Dumoulin?
我们能够从杜莫兰的身上学到什么呢？
First, we can follow his example of courage.
首先，我们能够学到的是勇气。
He was courageous as a pastor, as a churchman, as a polemicist.
杜莫兰是一个有勇气的牧师、教会领袖和论战家。
He lived under threat nearly every day of his life, yet he was faithful in preaching the gospel.
他几乎一生都生活在生命威胁之下，但却始终忠心地传讲福音，持守基督教真信仰。
We can also be inspired by his productivity.
其次，我们可以看到的是他的勤奋。
He produced more writings than any other reformer of the 16th and 17th centuries besides Calvin and Beza.
除了加尔文和贝扎之外，他是整个改革宗教会历史上著书数量最多的。
He was incredibly industrious.
他是极其勤奋的学者。
And finally, we can learn from his mistakes with regard to political entanglements.
所以我们可以从他的政治失误当中汲取教训。
He tried to ingratiate himself to King James to benefit the French Reformed Church and himself, but it backfired and he was exiled from France.
他曾经试图与英格兰国王詹姆士交好，以期待造福法国改革宗教会，为教会和自己谋取更大的影响力。然而他的做法却适得其反。
He lost his church and his home.
他失去了他的教会，也失去了他的家庭。
So we would be wise to avoid political entanglements that could jeopardize our ministry.
因此我们应当谨慎，避免陷入到可能危及到我们教会侍奉的政治纠缠当中。
Thank you.
这就是我们今天的第三讲，谢谢大家。如果大家现在有什么问题的话，我们只有短暂的大概十分钟的时间，我们可以把大家的问题提出来。有人已经有问题了，可以给 Nick， 或者你们没有写下来的话，也可以现场提问。We only have like maybe 10 minutes for a question.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, please.
That is a very big question.
Okay, let me translate that first. I will just be very brief. 所以问题是是否我们作为基督教新教留在罗马天主教里面进行改革是一个更好的选择 ，right? Am I doing that?
I'll try to be brief. Luther did not intend initially to break from Rome.
路德起初并不是想要与罗马决裂。
He did want to reform the church.
他希望从内部改革教会。
That's why it was a reformation and not a revolution.
因此这个是一个改革而不是革命。
And they worked, the Protestants worked toward that goal of reforming the church.
起初的新教徒的目的，努力的目的就是想要这样在内部改革教会。
And their hope was a...Council at which the Pope would be convinced of Protestant doctrine, the gospel of justification by faith, and then he would reform the church.
So they first suggested to hold a church meeting, and finally convince the Pope to accept 新教的这些教义，比如说唯独一心称义，然后让教皇来改革教会。
So in the 1520s and the 1530s, you see Protestants calling for this council.
所以你在1520年、30年代，你会看到很多当时的新教徒在呼吁要召开这种普世的会议。
There are many political factors involved with the Holy Roman Emperor and that, so politics gets in the way of some of this.
但是在当时有很复杂的这个政治局势，特别是在神圣罗马帝国的范畴之内，有很多这种政治因素参与到其中。
But finally, in the 1540s, Rome calls a council.
而到了1540年代45年，罗马这个他们召开了一个这个普世会议。
It was the Council of Trent, and no Protestants were invited.
这个叫做天特会议，但是他们没有邀请任何新教的神学家。
And then at the sixth session of the Council of Trent, which was at the first gathering, they addressed the issue of justification.
而在天特会议第六会期，他单独讨论了关于称义的教义。
And they directly stated, anyone who believed in justification by faith alone was anathema.Condemned forever.
对，在那里面，天特会议明确地写到，凡是相信唯独因信称义的，将会是被咒诅的异端。
So the Protestant says, the Protestant said, Rome has now anathematized the gospel.
因此，新教徒说，如今在天特会议上，罗马教会把福音本身给谴责为异端了。
At that point, the hope for reform.Was over.
因此从内部改革教会的希望已经没有了。
So it's then you see the Protestants call Rome a false church, a synagogue of Satan.
因此从新教角度来讲，罗马天主教是一个假教会。
So it's at that point that they really begin to call people out of the Roman Catholic Church.
因此从此以后，也就是四零年、五零年代之后，新教徒才开始呼召那些相信福音的人离开这个假的教会。
Because it's a false church.
因为这是一个假的教会。
So we see in Calvin, he refers to them as Nicodemites, like Nicodemus from John 3.
所以加尔文称这些留在天主教里面，明明知道天主教讲的是假的、是错的，还留在天主教里的人，称他们是尼哥底母主义者。
Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night.
所以就像罗马这个约翰福音第三章，尼哥底母是夜间去见耶稣的。
So these Nicodemites in Roman Catholic churches were Protestant by conviction, but they remained in the Roman Catholic Church.
所以这些尼哥底母主义者是他们虽然内心是相信宗教改革的这些因信称义的福音，但是他们外在还是要是当一个罗马天主教。
So Calvin calls them to come out and join a true church.
而加尔文呼召他们要离开，然后加入到一间真教会。Great, we have another question and another one, and then we call it, right? Please.
那我用中文来。
好，可以，没问题。Okay, so the question is, could Pastor Dan explain a little bit Pierre Dumoulin's eschatology, and in particular in relationship to his political alliance with King James?
That is a great question.
这是一个非常好的问题。
I actually don't know his eschatology in detail. I haven't read it.
事实上我并不是特别的了解杜莫兰的末世论，我并没有阅读过这方面的文献。
Because most of his writings were polemical works against Catholics, Arminians, other false teaching.
Yeah, 因为杜莫兰的大部分的写作是辩论式的写作，就是驳斥一些错误。
So he never wrote like a systematic theology.
他从来没有撰写过这种系统神学。
But if I could speculate,
如果我可以去猜测一下，
I would think he might be he certainly hoped for a reunion of all Christians in Europe.
他的确希望看到整个欧洲所有基督徒的一个合一。
And that was his plan that he came up with King James.
这也是他跟英王的这个计划。
So the desire was that Christendom would be reunited under Protestant theology.
而这个计划是整个这个基督教王国会在新教的神学框架之下完成这个合一。
But I don't know then if he saw this as a post-millennial, an aspect of a post-millennial dream.
但是我不认为这是这可以被解释成为一种后千禧年的一种理想国的思想。
He never expressly says like, if we accomplish this reunion, that's the start of the millennium.
因为他我没有读到过他明确的说，如果我们完成了这个合一的话，那么就是千禧年的开始。Good question, and I think that's yeah. And then after that, we can talk after this. OK， 我简单翻译一下问题。问题是关于涉及到上午提到的讲座当中提到，我们谈到这个基督教国家主义的这个问题，里面内部涉及到另外一个问题，就是我们如何去既强调基督教是唯一的真理，同时也去看到现代社会文化宗教上的这种多元化，这两者如何调和。
Yeah, I think the starting point, you're correct. Christianity, of course, we believe, is true. It's universal for everyone.
的确，我们相信基督教是绝对真实的，而且是普世的，对所有人都应该是真实的。
But the means of spreading the kingdom in this age is persuasion.
但是去拓展基督国度的方式，在这个时代拓展基督国度的方式是通过说服。
Through the preaching of the gospel empowered by the Holy Spirit.
是通过圣道的宣讲，借着圣灵的大能。
The movements that connect Christianity and politics, like Christian nationalism,
这个基督教把基督教的信仰与政治绑定在一起，例如像这种基督教国家主义的这种现象。
Like I said, at some point, it has to end with coercion.
这种现象最终将会使真理的传播不得不采取这种强迫的形式。
Because when the non-Christian does not submit, you have to pick up the sword.
因为在这种框架之下，如果人不去顺服基督教的真理的话，那么当基督教的当权者需要拿起刀剑来。
And we know this from 1,000 years of Christendom.
而我们已经在过去1000年的基督王国的历史当中看到这个现象。
So, as I look at this as a student of history, I can't see how it would be different than the first time we tried Christendom.
而作为研究教会历史的一个学者，我很难看到，这个做法，我们今天如果这样去操作的话，会比过去的1000年的中世纪好到哪儿去。
Now the advocates of Christian nationalism and a new Christendom don't usually say this publicly, but again, to me, the inevitable conclusion is forced conversions at the point of a sword.
虽然现代的基督教国家主义者或者是宣扬一个新基督王国的这些人，他们并不会大张旗鼓的明确的说这是他们要做的事情，但是按照我们做研究历史的这样的一个必然逻辑去推论的话，这是用暴力去强迫归信，这种是必然的推论。
And I just don't see that in the New Testament.
但是我并没有在新约圣经当中看到上帝这样命令我们这样做。
In this age, we preach the gospel and we hope for a transformation of society, but it's through the proclamation of the gospel. It's not through the sword.
我们在这个时代宣讲福音，我们当然也希望看到这个社会会有一些转变，对吧？但是我们使用的方式是讲道，而不是刀剑。
And that day is coming when Christ returns. He will put his enemies under his feet.
而将来有一天，耶稣基督会再来，到那一天的时候，他会真实的把他的敌人踩在他的脚下。
But I would say the Christian nationalists and those types have an overrealized eschatology. They're trying to do that today.
而基督教国家主义者所犯的问题和犯的错误是一种过度实现的末世论。他们希望将来在天国实现的事情，在现在的这个社会上实现。
Thank you.
好的，谢谢大家今天的参与，我们也感谢 Dan Borman 牧师，我们给他感谢他今天的精彩的讲座。那由于时间的关系，我们就不再去唱这个剧中曲了，我们一起做一个祷告结束好吗？ Let's pray to end this conference. Okay. 亲爱的天父，我们再一次来到你的面前，我们感谢你在今天给我们这样的机会聚集来一同纪念宗教改革的属灵的遗产，让我们回到那个时代，回到杜牧兰的时代，再去与他一同去挣扎这些信仰宗教真理良心政治等等这些一切的问题。主要我们祈求你继续不断的在这个时代借着你圣道的宣讲，借着你圣灵的大能来不断的更新你的百姓，更新你的教会，叫我们能够靠着圣道的宣讲而不是刀剑，能够顺服在你的权柄之下。也祝福在座的所有的弟兄姐妹，祝福所有的人来听到的这些人，求你与他们同在，祝福我们散去的脚步，也预备我们的心准备迎接主日的敬拜。我们把一切的荣耀归给你，祷告祈求奉靠耶稣的名，阿们。